Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. This is the second installment of our position preview podcast for the 2018 season. We're going to be looking at outside linebackers in this podcast with Tommy Dees. Tommy, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ben?
Good. I should probably put the caveat in that we're recording this on Tuesday, June 26th. You guys probably won't be listening to this podcast until next week sometime in early July. But so if anything were to happen with the outside linebackers in between now and then,
let's hope that you have or had a very nice 4th of July and celebrated America's independence for whooping the British.
Yeah.
And shot fireworks and ate barbecue and whatever else it is you do.
Mm-hmm. And you can also hope that none of Alabama's outside linebackers are injured in that time frame, as like was so often the case.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Whatever.
As was so often the case last season, this was the position group. Linebackers overall took a bunch of hits, but it was the outside linebackers that really, from the start of the season, were kind of hurting the whole way through. I think it was during the first game of the season that Christian Miller, Anthony Jennings, and Terrell Lewis, so that was the three guys that they were planning on playing the most at that at those two spots.
Yeah,
the three guys they were planning on playing the most all went down with injuries. Rashawn Evans, an inside linebacker last year, but a guy who had a lot of experience playing outside linebacker, also went down with an injury in that game, which further limited what you could do there. Alabama ended up pulling the red shirts off of a bunch of freshmen. Some
like
of them,
nine defensive backs at a time, it seemed like.
Yeah. Some of those freshmen certainly would have played no matter what. Dylan Moses was going to play last year.
Just got to play more and earlier.
Yeah, and played at a different position. You know, he started last season playing an outside linebacker, and by the end of the season was an inside linebacker and a very important inside linebacker for them.
Yes, absolutely. And he was one of the bright spots. You know, Alabama being so blessed with them because of they recruited so well to be so deep in talent that I don't think there's probably another team in the country that could have overcome that many losses at one position grouping the way they did and still performed at the high level. You know, I remember several years ago now, I think it was a game at Kentucky when Dante Hightower went down, and you're thinking, they just don't have another
Dante. I was at that game as a student.
They just don't have another Dante Hightower, and I think it was C.J. Mosley or whoever stepped in. It's like, gee, that guy's pretty good too.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of that that went on last year, and that helped them develop some depth that may be coming in handy this year.
Yeah. In any event, all three of those guys who were injured last year who were expected to play really big roles are all back this year. All are expected to be healthy, ready to go for the start of the season. Anthony Jennings, probably going to be your starter there at the jack position, which is more of the hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker position, has more responsibility than setting the edge on his side of the field. Christian Miller plays more of the Sam position. Terrell Lewis is a guy who can probably play both, but you probably see him more at the Sam. Jamie Mosley, a former walk-on, younger brother of aforementioned C.J. Mosley, also got a lot of playing time last year because of so many of these injuries, and I think acquitted himself well. He didn't show up maybe in the same way that C.J. did after an injury, but, you know, not everybody
There was not just some glaring hole, and you said, oh,
exactly,
that guy
just
can't hack
it.
And it's amazing. He's probably a special case for a walk-on anyway, with the legacy of his brother and everything. I think he's a guy they really wanted that I'd have to look, but may have had some scholarship offers that he turned down to walk on at Alabama. But
I think he did, yeah. South Alabama.
Yeah, I don't think they were at Ohio State and Michigan and, you know, Georgia or whatever, but I think he did have some Division I offers, so he's a little bit of a bonus that way. But he's a guy that really, really, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he can stay in the mix with everybody healthy this year, because he was somewhat productive and certainly filled a gap that needed to be filled at a crucial time last year. And then, of course, we're anticipating that Keith Holcomb is no longer part of this.
Yeah, well, Keith has played mostly inside linebacker. Yeah, we should probably go through and list the freshmen who will be coming in this fall, or the guys who are already here on campus who will have an opportunity to contribute there. That's going to be the big name is probably Iyabi Anoma, who was one of the five-star recruits in this class.
That's a guy whose name you're going to have to learn to spell really well, Ben.
Because
I'm probably going to write about other people.
Yeah.
I get to do that because I'm the sports editor.
Yeah. Cameron Latou is another guy who has good size, probably will be counted on to contribute at this position. During spring, Jerez Parks was playing with the outside linebackers. I think he signed with Alabama as a defensive lineman, which is where he was ranked as. If you'll remember, he's the gray shirt, the guy who announced his decision on National Signing Day in 2017, and the class was already full up, so they didn't have room for him, had to wait a year. But man, he certainly looks the part when you go out there and see him in practice. He was a top 100 recruit who ended up gray shirting. That's the level that Alabama's at right now.
Right, and it's been interesting the few times that Alabama's had guys like that. Some of them, you know, kind of just get lost or don't even end up showing up. But and some of them come in and you can see, boy, like that extra year was like, if they were good before, they're even better. And I wonder how you keep in that, you know, when you don't have a whole year without really contact or anything, how you do that. I'm sure you can get bigger and stronger. But Jalen, Nudy, the running back, Fowler.
Mm-hmm. Jalston Fowler, excuse me.
He's a guy who did the kind of gray shirt thing, and he came in and it's like, good Lord.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he's gained 5 years of physical maturity from what you would expect a normal guy coming in would be. He looked like an NFL guy from the day he got there.
Yeah. The only other linebacker signee in this class is Jalen Moody, probably more of a redshirt candidate, also probably much more of an inside linebacker guy. I don't think we'll be talking about him much on this
podcast.
But
they can play in four games now.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, and I haven't read the rule carefully enough, that does it have to be in the first four? They can just pick four games.
I think it's just four games.
Yeah,
so that game against the Citadel right before Auburn, we'll probably see a bunch of them.
Yeah, so Arkansas State, Louisiana, Citadel, and a game to be named later would be your four if you're on the redshirt bandwagon.
Last year would have been Tennessee. Last 2 years probably would have been Tennessee.
If you play against Arkansas State and don't play for the next 2 weeks, and then play against Louisiana, you probably know about where you're heading on that.
Yeah.
That's a bad thing. I mean, that could be a very helpful thing.
Yeah. It will make it very difficult for us to keep track of who's redshirting and who's not, because before it was easy. You just
gives
look
us
at
something to ask Citadel week. What else are we going to ask?
Boy, yeah.
I bet those guys are really disciplined. They come from a military school. What do you think, Coach?
I'm really certain that Nick Saban is looking forward to us asking about guys who are redshirting that they're going to be playing against the Citadel. I'm sure he'll take that question.
Cecil has a way of asking that question that gets him not as riled as some other people, which is, you know, are there guys, you know, who you're considering whether to play in this game because of the situation that way?
Yeah. We also just need the team to have a good week of practice against the Citadels for Nick to not be angry at the media. If he decides to just take it out on us, then there's nothing
he's
we can really
do
about
anyway. You're powerless in that situation.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with anything. You know, I see where you guys are writing that this team isn't very good. And you look around, nobody's written a word about the Citadel.
Yeah.
But they're writing about Auburn, if anything.
Well, for all the Alabama football players who's listening to this
podcast.
What do you
think about the Auburn game?
Yeah. All right. In any event, back to the outside linebackers. This is a group that I think people are pretty excited about, although people are probably still not exactly sure what it's going to look like because there was so little time last year for these guys to be playing together in the kind of the construction that was expected or the construction that people had hoped for because of all those injuries last year. In particular, I think it was Terrell Lewis and Christian Miller who didn't come back until the Auburn game or even later. And those guys at that point probably had some catching up to do. You didn't see them playing what you would expect to be starter snaps for November.
Right. Yeah, they played limited roles when they did come back, yes. Mm-hmm.
But still, I think you saw the level of play from that group step up, and you can probably expect it to step up a little bit further this year, assuming those guys can stay healthy, can gain some more experience, and kind of gel a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the excitement comes out of projection, because the guys who weren't there were the guys that your average fan and maybe some of the pundits and analysts and people in our business were expecting to be the ones who were really productive pass rushers. And they weren't as productive on the pass rushers maybe they had been the year before. And it's assumed that if these guys were there, boy, they would have 50 sacks. And I'm not sure that's the case, because I don't think they were quite as good in the front three and four. as they had been in some years in the past previous to that. So
yeah, that's probably fair. There wasn't a Jonathan Allen in the front
who's going to eat up 2 to 3 linemen and tight end shading over or running back watching him.
Not to take anything away from Daron Payne, but obviously a different kind of player than Allen was.
Right, yeah. I mean, he opened up more pass rush lanes than would have been opened last year, regardless who the outside linebackers are. So I don't think automatically having Anfernee and Christian and Terrell on the field means that Alabama's going to get 50 sacks this year, presuming they're all three healthy this year and raring to go. I do think they're stronger at those positions with them there than they were without them. But I don't think it's automatic that these guys are 10 sacks apiece guys.
No, probably not. I think there was...
If you got 15 out of the three of them, you'd be doing well.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, there was expectation for this group going into last year. At the same time, probably there wasn't enough credit given to some of the guys who had played there before them, like Ryan Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good group of outside linebackers.
Yeah,
that
Tim Williams.
Yeah, like, Tim Williams on the other side.
Post-Brandon Chicken was like a guy you talk about a guy whose motor ran very hard all the time.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, if I let up for 1 second, I'm not going to get to play anymore. That's what it looked like watching him. And, I mean, you only see guys, rarely do you see guys whose motor run that like that all the time. You know, Cornelius Bennett's motor ran like that, and Derek Thomas is their greater physical talents than him. But you saw effort out of him every play he was on the field from that point.
Yeah. It's also true, however, that I think the 2015-2016 seasons for Alabama, they set the school record for sacks, and then they broke it again the next year. Mm-hmm. So at some point, you just can't keep breaking your own school record every single
Alabama's
year. You can't. Those were both in the neighborhood of 50 sacks in the course of the season, part of which happens because you play 50 games instead of 13 or 14.
Part of that happens because nowadays people pass 40 times a game. And the, you know, let Derek Thomas rush at a team who passes 38 times, and he's going to have a few more sacks. Yeah, he's getting 7 sacks in games where the other team's attempting 24, you know, or 28 dropbacks or something. So, you know, these are good football players, but it's also a little bit different game. But I was not suggesting that these guys are not good.
No,
I'm just saying it's a little unrealistic to think that with them back now, there's 20 sacks or 15 sacks among them.
What I was going to say was that if you are able to kind of repeat last year's production, which I think was more in the neighborhood of 40 sacks or in the high 30s, then that's really an exceptional college pass rush. That's certainly good enough to win you the national championship, as you saw last year. And I think these guys also do a good job in other aspects of the game. Anfernee Jennings in particular probably didn't get enough credit while he was there for setting the edge last year. He had 41 tackles in 11 games. That's not nothing for a guy playing that position, where, like we said, a lot of it is just setting the edge.
Yeah, and Nick Saban will make it very clear to you, if you wish to discuss it with him, that he is much less concerned about sacks than about affecting the quarterback, which is getting pressure.
This is one of Tommy's rants.
I'm not even going that. But if you get deeper than that and ask Nick Saban, if a guy in that position can't set the edge, he ain't going to get a chance to get any sacks because they'll find another guy who can set the edge. Because he's going to stop the run. And there's no program in the country in our lifetimes over a span of that long that's been as good at stopping the run as Alabama has been under Nick Saban. You know, people think of Nick Saban as a DB coach, which is his background and everything. But you go back and look. I mean, you can count
on first and run defense almost every year.
You can count on one hand really good rushing performances against them. And it's somebody like Ezekiel Elliott who does the same thing in the NFL, you know. It's just almost impossible to run the ball on Alabama. And that part of that is that outside linebacker on both sides has to be able to set an edge. And you don't see guys getting around them very often.
Yeah. I think that's one aspect of the game that Terrell Lewis probably really stands out at, just because he's such a big, long, physical player. Obviously, he has.
I would not want 60 minutes of that guy opposite me. I can think of a lot of guys I'd rather go up against than that.
Yeah. I think he probably has as much potential on the defensive side of the ball as any player on Alabama's roster at the moment.
Yeah,
you could talk about Raekwon Davis, or you could talk about Mac Wilson or Dylan Moses, or anybody else like that. I don't know that you can have that conversation and not have Terrell Lewis be a part of it.
I kind of think of the three that we're talking about the most, the guys that were injured last year at outside linebacker, I think he has the most upside, and he's the one I expect to be the best football player out of the three when it's all said and done. Whether that manifests itself against Louisville in the opener, I don't know, because I don't know how the snaps are going to be allocated and whether he's going to be starting and kind of getting the starter share of the snaps. But I think before it's over, he will be, because I think he is a beast.
Yeah. That also, like we talked about with the wide receivers last week, is a position where you want there to be multiple guys where you can run guys in and out.
Yes.
Because if you're pinning your ears back in pass rushing, that's a physical, it's the demanding part of the game, both in terms of, you know, the cardiovascular output you have to do and the strength output that you have to do to be going in there against offensive tackles and getting chipped by tight ends and everything that's going on. So even for guys who are not going to be starting by the end of the season, they could easily still be playing 40 or 50 snaps a game.
Even in the NFL, where you've got, you know, almost designated pass rushers, there are teams that will strategize just to wear them out. You know, we're going to roll away from him and make him run farther distances and things like that, you know, and double him and make him work so that you hope to neutralize him later in the game. And there's a famous game probably before you were born, Ben, but where BYU played against a Boston College team. I think it was just post Flutie with Mike Ruth, who was a big-time interior defensive lineman, but he was a pass rush guy. I think he was a first-round guy and a productive NFL guy. But they were at that time throwing 40, 50 times a game, and they were just basically taking, you know, 10-yard drops to make him run farther. And by the second half, he wasn't as effective. You know, he kind of got back there, but he just didn't have the power. And if you only have one guy doing that all the time, eventually that guy gets worn out.
Yeah. I'm also curious to see what they do with some of the freshmen in this position group, because
there is room for a freshman or more to really get some snaps here. Yeah, I think
there is room for it. I also think that with the four guys that they have in the two deep right now, that would be Jennings, Mosley, Miller, and Lewis, they probably feel pretty good about where they stand, just because those guys have gotten so much experience over the last year.
Yeah, and Mosley's a guy you wouldn't feel about that way necessarily if you didn't have the injuries last year that got him on the field so much, and he was able to prove he belonged.
Yeah. At the same time, Iyabi Anoma, Cameron Latu, and then Jordan Davis are three guys that I think will be able to at least push for one of those spots. And it will be interesting to see what they can do with those four games like we were talking about.
Yeah, and I think the opening of the Samoan pipeline for Nick Saban.
Latu, I believe, is from Utah.
That's close enough. I think they have Samoans in Utah. I've discovered this. First of all, the under-over is how many apostrophes are in the name if you get the full name, you know, because that's probably short for something. And they've had, I cannot remember his name, offensive line.
Jarez Parks, by the way, forgot to mention him, but yeah.
He's not Samoan.
No, but he's a freshman outside linebacker.
We can talk about non-Samoan outside linebackers in a minute, but... you notice Alabama is getting some Pacific Island. I think the Tua pipeline and baby Tua is committed, and there are others probably being recruited. But I do think the dynamic Utah and Samoan might be one of the ones who could get on the field this year in that spot.
Yeah. Tosh Lupoi, by the way, is the position coach for this group.
Right.
At this point, he's one of the veterans on the coaching staff.
Yeah, he's been there for two or three years now.
Yeah, I think he's going into his fourth season.
I think
that's right. Because he got here the same time that I did. Had been on staff for
one
year.
Veterans
before
on our staff now.
Yeah. Tosh Lupoi had been on staff at Alabama for a year before that, working in the off-field role. But he's a guy who's done really a very good job of developing the guys who's come his way, and probably deserves a lot of credit for holding that group together last year with all the musical chairs that they had to play. I think the athletic trainers are deserving of some credit for the work that they did getting those guys back at the end of the season. I think they've gotten a fair amount of credit for it as well. But that was not an easy year, I'm sure, for Tosh Lupoi, and obviously did an outstanding job to hold it together and help them win a national championship.
Yeah, when you're kind of in a coordinator position and you have responsibilities for game planning and calling, and at the same time, you now, after one game, have a lot more on your plate as far as fundamental coaching and teaching basically a rookie or someone who hasn't played a lot, all of the stuff that they usually learn over a couple of years, you can't wait there. This week we're working on hand placement which mm-hmm. which is something you expect them to pick up over time. But if you don't have it down by week three or four, you're going to have problems. He had to do a lot of coaching with his guys. And I mean, just down and, you know, get your hands dirty, fundamental. This is how you play this position. This is what you have to know on this call. It's, I mean, I don't mean just the mental stuff, but the physical stuff of, you know, how do you get better leverage? What are you looking for? All those things that you might not expect to have to do if you looked at the group coming in, where you had more of a veteran group that at least had good backup experience coming in. And he basically was like, it's like, you know, like a junior college coach where every second year they're all new.
Mm-hmm.
He almost was in that position and did a heck of a job, obviously.
Yeah. One guy that we haven't talked a whole lot about on this podcast, but you'll see him out there on the field, I'm sure, this year, is Chris Allen. He was one of those freshmen who ended up playing quite a bit last year because of those injuries. And he would also probably be a guy that you could swing to either position, you know, depending on which freshman they think are ready. I would expect to see him playing where they think he can be most useful. He's also another guy that you might see pass up a veteran like a Jamie Mosley. I think, like Tommy mentioned earlier in the podcast, the kind of the standard for Nick Saban has probably been to give a veteran a chance first, and then if a younger guy outplays him, then the younger guy outplays him. But I think a guy like Chris Allen would have a chance to move up the depth chart going into this season as a sophomore.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I've actually heard a few fans that it's kind of right in the face of all the evidence think that Nick Saban's if you're a senior or you're a junior, you're, you know, not. Nick Saban seems to want to put the best players on the field. Now, sometimes those younger players need some experience before they're one of the best players, because he wants them to be assignment sound. But this is a guy who I think could be an impact player that we're talking about later this year and going into next year as a big time player. I think he acquitted himself very well, really, really thrown into the deep end of the pool very early. I mean, and I think there were probably a few times in the first, second, third, fourth game where you probably, if you studied film, could find a play or two where, boy, he was lost. But he learned, and he's got the physical tools, you know, and I think he's a guy that's going to be in that mix that will be on the field. You know, the one that's going to be interesting to me is just to see whether Jamie Mosley, who got some opportunities in part because of injuries, can keep giving himself opportunities, because he's maybe not the five-star athlete that some of the others are.
Yeah. Chris Allen also was a recruiting win in the state of Louisiana for Alabama a couple of years ago in the same class as Dylan Moses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that LSU would hate to be looking a couple of years down the road and seeing those two guys both lining up for Alabama's defense against LSU's offense and thinking what could have, should have been a...
Yeah, I don't think, you know, there's some speculation that that wouldn't be Ed Orgeron looking down the road a couple of years across the field at that. But I saw an under-over with 6.5 wins for LSU. And I talked to someone at one of my Illuminati meetings in Nashville, who's journalist who has covered an overseas coverage of LSU, and they thought that might be a little high.
Mm.
So, yikes.
Maybe we'll have
Bayou Hulk maybe packing up.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do a podcast betting the over-unders for these teams, get Cecil in here and do all that.
That could
sometime.
Be part of our picks podcast.
Yeah, the preseason picks or something.
Who won that picks thing last year?
I don't want to talk about it, Tommy.
Who lost?
Who was the only one who actually fulfilled his end of the bet and bought you lunch?
That would be you.
Yeah.
That would be you. And it was very good. Thank you.
To get the Welchers on here.
Yeah, we do need to talk about that. One of them needs to make a little drive.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to do it. We've got two of these position preview podcasts in the works. We'll be back with another
one. You know what? It's fun to talk football.
Yeah, it is. It's good to be getting close to that time of year again.
Yes, it is.
So thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back with another one later this week.